Words on Water. Words on Water.
Hi, welcome to Words on Water, a podcast from the Water Environment Federation. I'm the host, Travis Loop, and for this episode, I am in Houston, and I'm at the 69th Street Wastewater Treatment Facility run by Houston Water, and I'm here with a number of the folks that were on hand for Hurricane Harvey, a really unprecedented disaster for our country, and we thought it'd be really interesting to let the members of WEF and folks across the water sector hear a bit about this really unique experience that that these gentlemen went through.
My name is Thomas Martinez, and I'm the operations manager for the Northside Wastewater Treatment Plant.
One thing I wanted to start with is a bit of a description about how Houston Water got prepared when you saw this monster storm headed your way.
Well, the preparation came in from our senior system director starting up the meeting. We met there a few days prior to the storm actually hitting. At the meeting, we talked about the things that had to be done prior to the storm getting there, which was getting the trucks ready, full of fuel, getting the leach tanks full of chemicals, bisulfite and whatnot. We made a plan with all the operations managers, maintenance managers, and we set the staging locations from where we would be responding.
Responding, like, what did you anticipate you were going to have to do, like, you know, when it began?
Well, when it began, I think the biggest issue was that we had to make sure that people stayed safe and they didn't get hurt, make sure nobody got, you know, drowned or got electrocuted, because we were anticipating the water flooding and cutting out roads.
So as the storm really arrived, what was going on? What were you guys doing, and what were you seeing with your facilities?
So we were communicating amongst each other how the situation was occurring at different facilities, because we do have such a large area to cover, and we have so many facilities that the city of Houston operate, that we had to make sure that everybody was in contact and everybody stayed abreast of what the conditions were at each and every single facility, and what particular action the guys were doing to, you know, keep moving the water, keep treating the water.
What kinds of things started happening at your different facilities? What was really going on?
Well, the main thing was we were monitoring the levels in the lift station and the quality of the water in the plants. We try to keep as many pumps running by calling in the electricians, calling in the mechanics when it was still possible to do so, to reset and pull pumps, clean them for stoppage and getting them back in service.
Because the volume of water coming in from that was just causing problems.
Yes. The water at one point overwhelmed several facilities. There was some facilities that they just had so much water that we actually had to shut off the blowers, you know, to try to keep the solids inside the facility. And, you know, we had to make sure that the operators were going to be okay, that they didn't get stuck in, and, you know.
You guys were talking about how a number of people probably did just camp out, basically, and had to bunker down at different spots, right, at different facilities.
Right. There were a couple of facilities where the people actually did get stuck into the facilities where they couldn't even leave the plant. Those people, they were kept safe inside the facilities. Yeah. Except there was nowhere for them to go.
Yeah. Hopefully they had, like, vending machines to break into or something like that.
Yeah, they went through every piece of food that they had brought in with them. Yeah, the candy at the machine was gone.
What started happening, you know, I know it rained for a long time, like over 50 inches of rain. It wasn't like a quick event. That storm just sat over the area here. It rained for a long time. And then the flooding was stuck around for many days or after that. So what was happening, I guess, kind of after the bulk of the storm?
I think the first, when the hurricane first hit that Friday night, we actually had one day where we can actually still, like, move around. Flooding hadn't taken effect yet. But it wasn't until the day after the first 24 hours that that's when we became immobilized. We had to actually say, we're going to make the decisions now to save the solids, shut off the blowers at some of the plants, and move some of the people out of some of the plants, because we knew at that point that, you know, we were not going to be able to get back in, and we were going to lose some plants, some equipment, and then there was nothing else that we can do about it. Some that we knew we weren't even going to be able to get into for many days or weeks after.
Wow. How many facilities do you guys have in the area?
We have 39 wastewater facilities and over 400 lift stations.
My name is Richard Bellinger. I'm our Public Works Maintenance Manager. I oversee the lift stations, the off-site pump stations for the city of Houston.
And so when the flooding was, you know, really peaked and got real bad, any idea of how many, you know, stations and facilities were flooded out?
We lost a little over 120 lift stations, just the north side. The south side of Houston, we lost close to about 150. That's due to loss of power. Less than 100 on both sides, we did lose submerged underwater. Even though they were completely submerged underwater, they were still operating. You know, they still have power. We were still able to relieve the collection system, but at the same time, you know, it's pumping to a dead head at the nearest receiving stream, because the treatment plant's either dead or there's no power. In the Kingwood area, they got hit pretty the hardest as well. They have over 40 lift stations and 4 treatment plants up there. Those guys, they seen probably about 5 to 6 feet of water inside the treatment plant buildings.
Wow.
So it was a total loss. Once there was a break in the weather, we were able to be mobilizing. Some treatment plants and the lift stations, we had to utilize our airboats. During the preparation, we had to make sure our airboats were up and running. We had to make sure our high-rise vehicles were also working as well.
So you guys have airboats, huh? That's just part of your regular fleet of vehicles?
Yes. We have 2 of our own. Because of Hurricane Ike, previous hurricane, we've gone through trial and error basically back then. So during preparation time, as Mr. Martinez was explaining, we kind of knew somewhat what to expect and also the unknown. By the time the weather was letting up, some of the roads were able to be passable, we took the airboats, visited a couple of treatment plants that were completely submerged underwater. Mm-hmm. We did some evaluations. People don't realize, you know, we become first responders, because our main priority is, you know, what can we do to help the community? What can we do to get these people's lives back together, even though their home got flooded or just temporary power? But at the same time, we still got a job to do. We got to make sure we got running water, we got running wastewater. Just seeing, you know, a lot of the community in Houston, it just in the people's faces where their homes were totally flooded, you felt so bad for them, and it's heartbreaking. We work with law enforcement. There was plenty of times where we had to work with SWAT and a few other law enforcement because of certain areas had to be totally closure. So we had to work with law enforcement, allow us to go into treatment plants because they were, like I said, they were blocked off and not everybody was allowed to go unless you actually live in that community.
And then the treatment plants, 39 of them that Houston Water has, how many of those went, you know, offline, if you will, during Harvey?
It was a total of 5. 5 in Houston and, was it all 4? All in the, so a total of 9 in Kingwood and Houston as well.
Yeah. What happens when you've got a plant that's offline? What happens upstream, upflow of that facility?
If the plant is completely dead or flooded or just whatever the case may be, the treatment plant's lift station will be already backed up, mm-hmm. because of the receiving flow. Mm-hmm. So basically going upstream, it's already going to be backed up. Mm-hmm. It's going to be surcharged. You're going to have manholes running with raw sewage.
Gotcha.
So pretty much if the treatment plant's not pushing, the whole collection system is going to be surcharging, overflow with sewage.
I guess let's talk more about the recovery. I mean, it definitely wasn't quick, and there was definitely lots of parts to it. What else happened, you know, during, right after?
We also ran into, we have our 12-hour mat shifts, daytime and nighttime. We ran into an issue where we got to get these guys fed. couple guys were designated to authorize to purchase foods on the P card. We got to find food, got to find something. I mean, another thing that we ran into, our maintenance facility off of Cullen, we ran into an issue where water was contaminated in our fuel. So we ran into contaminated fuel.
Mm.
So we got a lot of vehicles going out on us because of water and the fuel.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to post-Harvey, traffic was becoming a nightmare. More people trying to scour, move around as well. So we that was another nightmare for us to deal with. Now that you have partial road closures, now you got to deal with the community as well to access certain areas. Probably about a couple of weeks after post-Harvey, people are trying to rebuild their lives, their homes. And another challenge was basically, you know, they were gutting their homes, their furniture, whatever got wet and destroyed is out on the street. So it made not only our jobs hard, but also like solid waste because there was no room. The traffic, the side streets, things of that nature, it was just, you have so much room. So it basically became like a one-way instead of a two-way, three-way road.
I'm Hollis Weeks, work for the electrical automation to support these guys in operation maintenance to make sure they have power and to make sure the communication links all communicate so we can have eyes and ears to see what's going on out there.
How long did it take? What was the timeline for kind of when Harvey, you know, peaked and the flooding really hit and then the water came down, water levels came down, you know, and then you were able to kind of get the treatment plants and the lift stations back online. How did that all line up?
Yeah, I guess taking it, you are familiar with what we do, but we say wastewater treatment plant. We're just like a utility where, you know, we tend to our customers. In other words, you have the light company. We don't have light, electricity. We can't. But we're providing water and taking care of the water all the way downstream, take it to the plants, process it, clean it, release it. When all these people flee their houses for protection, then it was flooded, and then they tried to get back into town to take care of their properties. They couldn't live in a normal state. They wanted to get into their home, strip it down, clean it, hose it down, but we didn't have power and we didn't have sewer. So we told them not to use the water hose, don't use the toilets, don't use the sinks, and often couldn't even run their air and living conditions. Their food, they had none. So we're trying to provide a service at the same time to accommodate through Harvey.
Yeah,
and
wow.
The problem was probably for the first week, 2 weeks, we couldn't even get into half of our facilities.
Wow.
The roads were blocked off. The roads had been damaged and debris was in the roads. Two of our major plants on the north side, I think it was 2 or 3 weeks before it recited and we could even get into the plant. And the first thing you have to do is hopefully have power, which most of them we didn't. But you have to strip down and clean all the electrical gear to make it safe and then take chances and start turning it on and, you know, work it in stages.
Yeah, yeah.
And the same way with the water. You have to work it in stages. You got to get the farthest run pumping to pump it downstream.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there to the next location. Till you finally get it to a utility plant like this one to process it and clean it. It just took time, and you know, our resources were thin. We couldn't get suppliers because it hit so much of the Texas, Louisiana coastline. We couldn't find parts and pieces, couldn't get food. And then now that we do, as you would know, it's based on funds. It's going to take millions and time to get everything back to normal.
Yeah,
you just can't strip it and say, I want brand new, because you got to fund for it, and that's the taxpayers.
Is everything fixed now, if you will, on the electrical front and kind of things you deal with?
Not 100% up to standards, but everything working.
Mm-hmm.
So now we can start living and processing, but we still want to replace and get better. Now we have to go back and secure it properly, make sure it's perfect, it's safe, and it will last us throughout the years to come.
It makes sense given the scale of Harvey and all that rain that we're about, what, a little more than 3 months afterward. So it's a process cleaning up after a storm like that.
And then some of these lift pumps, blowers that they work on, getting them to them, getting them stripped apart, and then it takes these men months, possibly half a year, to get them reconditioned and bring a blower of that size back to the plant.
Wow.
Just the parts and pieces they use are not accessible within a month or two process.
from your standpoint, you know, on the electrical side of the house, any lessons learned or changes? You know, I know you're still in recovery mode, really, but, you know, as you look forward, you know, they say the storms are going to keep coming. To mention that. Are there any lessons learned? Do you think, okay, here's some things we might want to try to do differently, or have things set up in a different way? Or
We're learning as we go along. It starts at the top. First, the local light company has to provide power, so they're trying to do more of a secure, higher concrete poles, underground service. Then once we get to the plants, we're trying to do redundancy, double feeders, so if they lose power one way, they can feed us on another grid coming from the other direction.
Okay.
And then recently we have purchased up to 50 generators to locally dispatch and get parts and pieces of the plant going till we can get real power up.
My name is Raymond Rondeo. I'm the maintenance manager for Houston Water, or City of Houston, over all the treatment plants and all the lift stations.
Tell me your perspective on how you felt when you saw this storm coming toward you guys.
I mean, it wasn't so much the wind. Mm. It was the rain. We knew Houston is a basin.
If you could talk a little bit about that, because that's I think what made the flooding so bad, right?
Everything rushes down to, you know, your lowest point. And as big as Houston is, it's close to the ocean. So, I mean, most of your water sources, rivers, streams, bayous, they're all flowing to the ocean. And so they pass through Houston.
I mean, and Houston's a big... The development is it's over a big area, so there's a lot of roads and rooftops and hard surfaces for that water to run off of.
Exactly. I mean, it's not like it's just a little town and everything else around is a forest. But no, I mean, we're spread out. We got concrete, blacktop everywhere.
Yeah.
So you have a whole bunch of surface area that you have runoff from. It's the bayous and streams has to handle it. If it's a high tide, then where does the water go?
Mm.
You know, it really can't go out to the ocean. It will go out slowly, but in the meantime, it has to puddle somewhere.
I was reading about the soil here is really a really clay,
clay
soil.
Yeah,
so that water just shoots off that.
Yeah, exactly. It just runs off. It's not something that will soak up water.
Yeah.
It's clay, and you know, I mean, clay, it looks like it's saturated all the time.
Right.
But it's not, I mean, you can't do anything else with it. It's super saturated.
Yeah.
And so the water runs off, and that runoff in turn fill up the streams, and the streams can't drain fast enough, so it starts, you know, coming over the bank. They're cresting 4 or 5 feet over, you know, their floodplain. So, and that water has to go somewhere. It stays in the street, and at the same time, we're the sewer system, which is in the street. So now we got 4 or 5 feet of water above our collection system.
Mm.
So now instead of a sanitary system, we're almost operating like we're in a combined sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
And we have rainwater inundating the collection system and mixing with the raw sewage in there and coming out of a lower point downstream.
So, I mean, were there overflows then?
Yeah, there was.
Yeah.
I mean, definitely. You would never go through a storm like this and knowing fully well that your treatment plants are down and your pump station and lift stations have all gone down because they were either flooded or loss of power. In most cases, even if they were flooded, some of them were submersible stations.
Mm.
And so the equipment is made to run underwater. All the electrical is flooded.
Yeah.
You know, so nothing's running.
50-something inches of rain. Really.
Exactly.
I mean, that's all you have to say. Unbelievable.
Yeah. So
what was it like, you know, for you and for your responsibilities when that storm was really hitting and when the flooding really took off?
I mean, we knew we had our work cut out for us. We try to prepare mentally as best as we can because we know we're going to be here. We coordinated with everybody we knew that can help us, even the guys on the operation side. You know, they were out in the field helping us, moving hoses, turning wrenches, because we need to get our facilities up and running.
Yeah. And they're doing that, and you guys are all doing this stuff while you got, you know, family and friends out there dealing with the storm and their own impacts, but you're out responding to the emergency.
Yeah, we had a few guys that was at work while their home was being flooded.
Oh, yeah.
And you could see it in their faces. I mean, they were kind of very, very concerned. Some of them, we tried our best to get them close to where their homes were so they can, you know, evacuate their family. Some of the families had to be evacuated, and they were safely, so that was a good thing.
That's good.
And those guys came right back to work. So, I mean, they're very dedicated, and I want to thank them.
Yeah.
Our mayor was out working, our public works director, or, you know, everybody was out.
It goes to that concept of the water sector being part of the first responder wave, no pun intended there, but being part of the first responder crew, you know, for a lot of the other folks, like police and fire and whoever, for them to be able to do their jobs, you know, exactly. Power and water are pretty vital.
Yeah, and I can truly say, I mean, we had running water the whole time. We had running water the whole time. When people needed water, they could turn on their faucet and water came out.
Mm. Just what kind of things did you see or did you deal with or want to talk about in the, you know, days, weeks afterward?
The first thing we did was we looked to see what, you know, what the damage was and what went underwater. And if it went underwater, we had to make a determination of whether or not it would be operational and what would it take to bring it back to some kind of operation.
Mm-hmm.
In some cases, all the electrical was under, all the electrical controls went underwater. And so we had to bring in temporary equipment. You can never have enough temporary equipment to run a city this size.
Yeah, yeah.
And so we had to choose the areas or the plants or the facilities that we were going to deploy to get them up and running. That would give us the most benefit or serve a larger area of constituents or people.
So some of that equipment that ended up underwater then became unusable, was damaged, no good,
yes.
Had to put in temporary stuff while you were then going and finding or waiting to get replacement permanent equipment, basically.
Yeah, we're still going through that process right now.
Yeah, like what other kind of equipment?
A lot of times it's motors that were burnt up because they went underwater. You know, everything was operational when the storm hit.
Yeah.
And we had to continue to operate because people still were in the city and not everybody evacuated. So because these equipment were running when they flooded, they were flooded or became flooded in an operational state. They were live power to these pieces of equipment. And as anybody can tell you, I mean, you have water and you have electric, something is going to go bad.
Yeah.
So, you know, but they were underwater. So we had to pull them, you know, basically disconnect everything, take them out, take them to the shop, get them analyzed, see if they were something that we can just dry out, put new bearings in, grease them up, you know, get them lubricated and ready to go and bring them back. While the electricians or the automation guys were busy working on getting the electrical or our control panels back to operational state. We had like three different groups of people working in the same area trying to bring everything back up and running.
And where do things stand now?
All our facilities are operational, which is, you know, I don't have to pat myself on the back, but when considering what we have accomplished here.
Yeah, what you were facing and dealing with, yeah.
We can probably say that we're ready for anything now. After going through this.
I mean, I couldn't imagine more rain than that, really. And what, last kind of question for you, any lessons learned or changes or different approaches, you know, from your seat?
Like anybody else, you could never have enough spares. So moving forward, I mean, that's going to be my main goal, is to try to procure some additional spare equipment to use in the treatment plants, because the treatment plants are a biological process. They need air, you know, to move the materials around the bugs and provide air for all of your organic material.
Mm-hmm.
So if we have no air, the plant's pretty much dead. And to get it back to where it's operational or doing its thing, it takes a while. If we can have enough portable blowers and equipment to run them, which is a generator, then that's going to be my goal. So we can get to our facilities and at least get air into it and get them running. And then some other generators to run our pumps, our main pump stations. And if we can get that, you know, we can move water. And if we can move water and we can get it out the street, get it away from people's houses, people are not going to get sick. I mean, all of this rain, all of this flooding and all this stuff, and not one case of cholera or any of the disease-causing illnesses that we see in other countries and places where raw sewage, humans come in contact with raw sewage. Didn't happen here in Houston.
Sydney Bulmer. I'm over the south area wastewater treatment plants.
So your side of the story, Sydney, when your thoughts when you saw this historic storm heading your way?
Well, for me and my counterpart Thomas over here, well, I had my guys. I called my guys and told them I wanted top off tanks. We're going to drain sight glasses, secure valves on the tanks, reduce our solids inventories in the plants, of course, to be ready. Secure our buildings, our facility grounds, top off the trucks, have extra gas cans, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Give folks, our tier one folks, that's our seniors and supervisors, we give them the take home trucks so that way they can respond much quicker. We even set up our service contracts that we utilize for electrical maintenance. We have service contracts with the different vendors that we and chemical as well.
Mm-hmm.
I had my guys also prepare our staging locations and develop a who's going to work what 12-hour shifts so we can cover 24/7. So that's some of the stuff we did to prepare.
And you feel like all those preparations gave you the best shot? Or, I mean, you feel like if you didn't do a lot of those things, that things would have been worse?
Much worse.
Yeah.
Much worse. Fortunately, a lot of our guys, Houston has a history of having a few floods over the last few years, and we've got a lot of veterans who've been through it, few of them, so they're pretty well rehearsed in what we need to do and how to prepare themselves and their families to for the long haul in case we have these, like we did, 3, 4, or 5 days of nonstop at work.
Yeah, that's right. Houston had some floods in 2015 and mm-hmm. 2016, so even though it might not have been as quite the flooding as Harvey gave you, at least it was some practice, if you will, for this.
Yes, sir.
So then from your end, talk about when the storm was here, you know, what was going on? What were you seeing?
Before, during, after storm, what we were doing is I was having our crews going to different plants and we were getting 4-hour updates so we could pass that information up to our upper management. So every 4 hours, we were getting plant updates. So we're always knowing what plant was what. Can you access it? Can you not access it? Where the employees were, what condition plants were in. When we could finally access some of the facilities that we couldn't access, then we go in and do plant evaluations. We go in from front to back with our electricians and our maintenance folks, and then we'd do our evaluations. What do we need to do to bring this particular facility back online? Or was it partially online? Some plants were partially online. Mm-hmm. So what do we need to do? So we did those type of things. We worked as a team. And meanwhile, constantly getting updates, seeing what's what. There's times where we had some coordination things where we did with the, like I said, service vendors. We actually had some cops have to help deliver some of the chemical loads to some of the plants because some of these areas were inaccessible.
Wow.
So the police had to do escorts to get chemical to the plants because the majority of the plants were still functioning.
Wow. Yeah, that's amazing.
Well,
you said so amazing. There's 39 plants and 9 of them were went offline. That's incredible, though. You had, you know, over 3/4 of them still going.
It's full credit to our staff that did their job out there.
Your perspective on, you know, as you got a little bit after the storm, the weeks afterward, what did that bring for you?
Well, my area, unfortunately, for almost 2 weeks afterwards, we finally got into 2 of our facilities that it took us almost 2 weeks to get into.
Just to get into them. Because of the water levels as the roads and...
Yes, we took some airboat rides. We had to do some airboat rides into the facilities to do a pre-check to see what we're going to... Just to get an idea what we're looking at when the water finally goes down, we can get in there.
Yeah.
To see, kind of get an evaluation of the damage that we're going to have to deal with when we get in. And it was just stunning, these 2 facilities. Absolutely amazing, because we had to launch the boats way down stream.
I mean, so you take a long ride
on the street, back up the boat, let it out there on the street, and take a boat ride up into the plant.
Yeah. Something you never really imagined doing, I guess, huh?
The water was so high, we actually went over one of our service trucks, because that's how high it was.
That's crazy. That's, say, like 12 feet of water or
at
something.
That is one of... Mr. Hollis is one of his electrician service trucks, and we had to go right over it to get into the plant. it was interesting time.
yeah.
lessons learned. We learned a lot of things. We're going to try to elevate a lot of our electrical equipment, switchgear, that we can above a certain area. So we've learned that we're going to try to move some of this electrical equipment.
Because this had to have been the highest watermark ever that Houston's seen.
Correct.
Right? So.
So that's our goal long term, is how to get these removed and consolidate a few of these facilities that are in the worst prone areas, flood prone areas. Because a couple of these facilities, due to where they are, their location, and the reservoirs, when they have to release the water from the reservoirs, we can see that it's always going to be a problem for us. So we're looking at trying to do a consolidation. And we have, fortunately, we have a lot of engineering folks that work for the city, and we can get consultants come in and help us with a great plan to come in, consolidate a lot of these facilities, and move a lot of our electrical stuff up. And like I said, if it wasn't for those contracts with the maintenance, motors, blowers, electrical, we have a couple of contracts for electrical, and if it wasn't for those guys, man, we got a fast turnaround on a lot of our equipment, got our plants back up. We learned a lot, but because we've been through some stuff before, it was a little bit smoother than some folks may have thought.
You mentioned also, you know, so it wasn't just the water. Well, it wasn't just the rainfall itself, but they had to release water from some reservoirs.
Yes.
So that was a whole other.
We have two reservoirs, Barker's Office and Addicts Reservoir, that the Army Corps of Engineers had to release because they thought it was going to go over.
Yeah.
It was out of there. It was about to lose their containment. So they did try to do a controlled release. Doing a controlled release, it still caused problem downstream to a lot of the neighborhoods and residents.
Mm-hmm.
We would go into these, try to go into our plants and the neighborhoods, and these people who've lost everything. It was very heart wrenching to talk to them. And all they could think about was giving us water, giving us food.
Really?
Yes, it was actually very humbling to talk to them. Hey, do you need a place to rest? Do you need, you know, it was that kind of thing. Houstonians are amazing.
Yeah, any other lessons learned you want to mention?
We did pretty well. We had, we worked out our, one of the things we didn't do it right at first is, but we did it as we went, was fueling locations, because we ran into a Cullens, one of our main fueling locations, which caused us to find other fueling locations, which sometimes wasn't the easiest to get to, being that almost everything was flooded. So we may have to work on that in the future to secure our fueling. Because you remember, we got a lot of guys out working.
Yeah, over a huge area.
Yeah, over a huge area. There's a lot of service trucks out there, a lot of folks out there. So, and our upper management, they just helped us all along the way. And when it was time to do where we didn't have something, a service contract for, they went out, got the money for it. The mayor, they just went on, got it done.
You live in this area. You got the Gulf of Mexico there. You saw Harvey, but then you saw Irma. And then Maria, do you think about the fact that there's more of these things coming each year, and that they seem to be coming in pretty strong?
We've been through a couple of these already, and some improvements were already made. Mm-hmm. Because, like Raymond said, you know, you're not going to keep getting a handover every time something happens, and you know you didn't do something about it the last time.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a lot more of that's going to continue. You know, they know exactly what happened where. And what it is that they need to do to, you know, just make it better for us. I think this event did bring into focus maybe the need that they do need to consolidate, get rid of some of the facilities, some of the lift stations, so that, you know, we don't have to deal with some of the issues that we had.
And it would be getting rid of some of the lower-lying lift stations, or?
Yeah, I mean, and as well as enlarging them, you know, or enlarging the capacity of the collection system or the facility itself.
Mm-hmm.
I guess with all the construction and just the way the city is, I think with everything that's, all the factors that's in the city of Houston, is just something that we can't do nothing about but just deal with it the best we can.
Basically, what we have to do, we're going to look to do, is to consolidate our facilities, try to get the lower-lying lift stations and treatment plant out of that flood zone, harden the facilities that were standing and we know are in a higher area, making them more operational during these storms. I mean, if we harden those facilities, we have multiple sources of power, we're high enough to where we avoid the flooding. those facilities would be better. You know, we can just turn off the equipment when the storm is in the site, so we don't destroy anything. And then as soon as the storm passes, turn it back on. And that will work to the benefit of the citizens of Houston. I mean, if we can't have operational facilities after the storm, these people are going through enough right now. I mean, they got flood, they got no food, they got, you know, all the stuff that are, you know, not what we are accustomed to. Mm-hmm. They have to deal with. Wastewater is the last thing they want to worry about. They want to be able to flush your toilet and what stuff has got to disappear. When it don't happen and it's coming up in another part of their house or in front of their, you know, in the street, they're not going to be happy. We have been through several storms, and so we keep learning. Keep learning and we keep making changes. Like anybody else, the only way you survive is by adapting and changing. And that's what we're doing right now.
My name is Aisha Meng, and I'm Deputy Assistant Director in Wastewater Operations.
From your seat, could you just kind of share your general thoughts and perspective on, you know, the storm and how your how everyone responded?
It's kind of funny. You have standard operating procedures and you have dry runs and drills throughout the year, but you can never really prepare. And this one, in all honesty, the entire world was watching.
Yeah, it's true.
So we were really, really proud of our staff that rose to the occasion and stayed in the plants. Even those who had property damage and lost some homes, they really took pride in their work and their job and the citizens. And some were stuck at plants and couldn't even see their loved ones.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, there was a lot of preparation to try and make sure that our staff had food, that equipment was on standby. Sometimes when a storm like this hits, there's nothing you can do but just wait.
And from your seat and perspective, what's kind of, I guess, the lessons learned? What are the changes that you all are trying to make? What are you going to try to do moving forward differently or focus on?
Harvey kind of created a unique situation where we were kind of forced to analyze some future plans sooner than we had anticipated.
Mm.
So if we have plants that are near bayous that have flooded before, and we possibly had plans to have a capital improvement project for it, we're now looking at, should this plant stay there to divert the flow? Should we turn it into a lift station? So Harvey kind of forced that kind of analysis. We're kind of moving in that direction.
So it's speeding up some of those plans.
Because it just doesn't make sense. Why spend money rehabilitating a plant that you know has a potential to flood again? Another thing that's come out of this is really a technology hub. It was announced at WEFTEC in Chicago that Houston is partnering with Accelerate H2O and kind of creating a technology hub where different technologies can kind of use our treatment plants to test or prove that their equipment or technology works.
Oh, wow.
So we actually just had a kickoff Monday at Rice University. So we're really excited about that.
Yeah.
One of the things that kind of, it started before Harvey. And again, Harvey just kind of
sped things up.
But one of the things that they were looking at before was kind of creating like a database of vendors, equipment, firms that could kind of, that already have been vetted. So right after Harvey, we had the energy corridor that was down. Although their buildings had electricity, they could not flush their toilets because we had two wastewater treatment plants there that were completely submerged. They realized how important wastewater was.
Right.
They never actually gave it any thought.
Uh-huh.
But they were losing money because their employees could not flush the toilet.
Yeah.
So they actually helped us kind of reach out to these different vendors that had already been vetted to see if they could provide portable units that we could just maybe place at a lift station, or if they could help treat some of the wastewater until our plants could get up and running. So a lot of partnerships were created.
Yeah, new partnerships.
New partnerships. So
because people realized, wastewater, toilets. These are important things. Yeah, sanitation. Yeah,
absolutely. So that's kind of exciting. Kind of the new direction that we're going in is kind of just analyzing. Do we need like a regional hub that can maybe house some equipment that can be dispersed not just in Houston but kind of in the Gulf?
Mm. Oh, like any even bigger.
Yeah.
If a storm hits Houston or a storm hits New Orleans or a storm hits Corpus Christi or something, there's this gigantic warehouse somewhere and
possibly.
That's just an idea. Different types of equipment available.
Yeah. Kind of thing. because we've found that, you know, yes, we can help you, but we have to ship this from California. Well, we don't have that much time to wait for a shipment from California.
There's definitely a raised awareness of hurricanes and that they're seemingly getting stronger and more frequent. And is that something that you all are grappling with, or that your regional decision makers, local decision makers, elected folks are concerned about and want to help address or build resilience for?
I think so. I think individuals in the water and wastewater industry already knew the importance of the type of work and services that we provide. And I think some elected officials and even citizens were just not completely aware of what we did and what we provided for them. They kind of just took it for granted or didn't even give it any thought. They flushed the toilet and that was it.
Yeah.
But when they were told to reduce flushing the toilet or doing laundry or washing dishes, they had a new perspective for the services that we provide. So I think these catastrophic storms have definitely raised awareness.
Words